we had these types of incidences, and this is what occurred, and this is how the breach happened, and this sort of thing. So while they had things covered in terms of the types of breaches that oftentimes affect a particular industry, such as healthcare, they had previously collated these data points in terms of the type of the breach or the type of the incident that it was. Well, they've taken a slightly different approach this year and kind of covered trends to begin with and then collated things by industry. So I think the idea from their perspective was to help you hone in on information. If you're in a specific industry such as healthcare, then the idea is to help you to hone in on understanding what are the prevalent types of breaches and attack vectors affecting the industry that you're in. And I can absolutely see some value in that. However, I would argue that I think it's equally as valuable to know what are all the ways in which organizations are getting breached. Because fundamentally, your job as an IT person or as a business decision maker deciding where to put resources and what risks exist, how to mitigate those risks technologically, well, really, you need to understand what all of the threats are, not just what the prevalent threats are for your particular industry. So let's get started. So they covered 53,000 incidences, and of those 53,000 incidences that they investigated, over 2,200 of them were confirmed data breaches. So I don't necessarily think that that is an indicator of anything other than, you know, don't take that data. I want you to be very careful to not take that data as saying that, oh, well, you know, the bad guys are statistically not succeeding that well. That's really not the conclusion that you should make from that data. The conclusion you should make from that data is that there are immense mass quantities of attacks occurring all the time. One of the statistics to remember is that there are over 12,000 new variants of malware being created every hour. And I'll get back into that later on here in the report review. But the fact remains, you need to be focusing on the fact of how many of these attacks are actually being successful. And then I think another important aspect to realize is that when you look at how many of these attacks are actually successful, you need to look at how many of these you could have super, super, super easily mitigated. You know, one of the things that I want to draw your attention to as we go through this is how easy it is actually to mitigate a lot of these risks. And I think that this is kind of an echoing of last year's report coverage that I did, because one of the big themes that came out of last year's report review was that I'd say 98% of the methodologies as to why organizations were getting breached were very easy to mitigate. So I go back to this whole point of, I don't think that achieving a positive security protection outcome is hard. It's complicated. And you have to have a significant amount of skill and vigilance to get your organization there and to keep it at a protected status. But my point is that it is reasonably formulaic. Now, the sad thing is that statistically, I don't really see that many organizations doing it appropriately. So to give you an example of this, I just came back from the security conference for people that represented in a particular industry, specifically the security appliance market. So this was all of the manufacturers, channel partners for all of North America, Central America, and South America. So, you know, what, half the planet? Okay, at least in geography wise, maybe not in population density, but half the planet in terms of geographic space, there was about 220 people represented at this conference. Okay, in terms of that entire geographic space was represented by 220 people. About half of those were technical people. So now let's imagine you got 110 people in a room, and then you start surveying things such as, and I'm going to caveat it, throw another caveat in there. This is not a conference that is representative of organizations that are 13,000 employees, or 10,000 employees and up. It's not. This is a conference that is representative of organizations that say, like, have 5,000 users and under. Now, that happens to be the vast majority of organizations out there have 5,000 users and under. So it's a very good sampling, and it's an extremely good sampling of what's happening in the small to mid-market business space. And in this conference, there was a lot of opportunities for interaction, and so there were a lot of questions about, okay, who's doing this security technique and who's doing that security technique? And it was really an assessment of who's doing this and that security technique across all of their customer base. And so one person's hand not being raised when a question is asked, such as, are you doing egress proxy filtering? That indicates that all of the customers that individual's organization takes care of do not have that security feature in place. So when people positively acknowledge that they are not utilizing a particular security approach across their entire customer base, it is very shocking. Very, very shocking. So, of this 110 individuals in this room, one of the questions that was asked about, are you segmenting your customers' networks? And of that, there was less than 10 people, there were less than 10 people that had raised their hand. And I find that to be horrifically shocking because I was doing network segmentation back in 1995. Network segmentation is not a new technique. It has been a security standard best practice for more than 20 years. Is network segmentation hard? Well, it's harder than not segmenting it. But the thing you have to realize is that if we're talking about 110 technical people that are representative of potentially tens of thousands of customers in the SMB space, and only, less than 10 of them raised their hand, that they were doing what I would characterize as absolute brain dead, stupid, simple, easy, absolutely mandatory security configuration at the network level, then that really does not speak well for the state of security in the SMB market, which again is small and medium business, which is categorized as 5,000 users and under. So, scary, scary, scary stuff. And so that's why I think that reviewing the Verizon Data Breach Investigations Team annual report is so important. And last year, why I had come to the conclusion that 98% of the reasons why organizations had gotten breached was because they were just run by idiots who were not doing basic IT standards and best practices for security, stuff that we all have known for 20 years you should be doing. And I'm not saying that these things don't evolve over time, they absolutely do. But it's like if you've ever come to the conclusion that you need to be proxying traffic so that you can inspect it to make sure that data is not inappropriately exfiltrating from your network, well, gee, you ought to be doing that proxying everywhere that you possibly can. And same thing with DNS egress filtering. Same thing, because DNS is a massive data exfiltration vector. I mean, it's just huge. And the reason it's huge is because so few organizations are actually proxying that traffic on an egress basis. And that is because it takes horsepower to do so. And they may not have properly designed and planned their network in order to accommodate for having that capability. But really, the engineering and implementing the capability to prevent breaches is vastly and exponentially less expensive than experiencing a breach. And some organizations may never actually come back from having the breaches that they've had because of their damage to their public reputation. And we have to be very aware of the statistic that more than 50% of all businesses in the SMB space that get breached, they just go out of business within a year. I mean, just go out of business because I think of two reasons. Number one, they can't continue to do business because their systems are breached. And number two, they probably do not have the funding to engage in a breach mitigation routine, and to remediate and to close and to clean up that process. So fundamentally, if you as an organization are not taking a proactive approach to taking control of the timing and the cost profile of preventing security breaches, then you may just be an organization that goes out of business. All right, so let's get into the report here. They looked at 43,000 successful incidences of stolen credentials. And I wanted to really bring this to your attention because credential theft is immense. It is an immense problem. You have to assume that credentials are going to get stolen. You must assume this. And bar none, the thing that I see most prevalently happening is credential theft. I mean, like, I see that myself as the most prevalent incident that is occurring. And so you have to assume credentials are going to be stolen. So what are you going to do about it? Well, number one, you need to have password management practices in place. Passwords need to be changing every 90 days at least. In some cases, you might want to change them every 30 days. But certainly, if you're looking at a system that says, boy, this is a system that could be remotely authenticated to, all right? So I'm going to draw a distinction between resources that are accessible exclusively on-premise versus resources that are cloud-hosted. So for resources that are cloud-hosted, you really must, and I'm not going to say this is you want to be doing this. No, you must be using multi-factor authentication. If you are not using multi-factor authentication, then complete chaos and havoc can be born, where what you have is credential theft then leads to a full breach, simply because there was no other mechanism in place to prevent an unauthorized party from utilizing those credentials. And in my experience, what happens is people that are not using multi-factor authentication, they basically get their stuff breached. And the only way that they know that anything has happened at all is because some funny business starts happening, like their profile photo gets changed, or somebody is sending emails on behalf of them, and there maybe it's the CEO's email account that has gotten breached and compromised, and that the bad guys are now sending emails on behalf of the CEO to the CFO or to the accounting department or something like that, stating, I need you to transfer these funds here and there and whatever, or I need you to add a new vendor, or we're going to onboard this new vendor, and then I need you to cut them a check for $300,000 or whatever that process is, so that it becomes this mechanism for spear phishing at that point. And so the thing is multi-factor authentication on most of these systems is an included feature. So if it's an included feature and then you're not using it, well, that's pretty catastrophically stupid. Because if it is something that is included and it's not costing you anything more, but then you're not using it and it is so cheap and easy to use it, wow, Why would you allow that sort of a risk factor to exist in your business? Okay, so multi-factor authentication, absolutely mandatory. And if you choose to not use it, then you need to realize that you just open the door to the bad guys, basically. And there are still organizations that I know of that are saying, oh, it's too hard. Having multi-factor authentication is too hard, or people can't handle it. Well, then I hope that you've got a lot of cybersecurity insurance that you've purchased. So the next piece of the report that I thought that was interesting is they were talking about who was actually the causation of the breaches, who was perpetrating these breaches, and just in large categories, 73% of breaches were perpetrated by outsiders, so people that were not internal people. However, 28% were internal. So, wow, this means that you have an insider breach problem. You have an insider trust problem to the degree of 28% of breaches. Now, this is not 28% of your employees, okay? This is 28% of breaches were perpetrated by insiders. And that's it kind of a combination of two factors. Number one, people just being malicious themselves, or people being stupid because they're not trained. And so, you have to say, well, what value is it to us to train our internal people to not be victims of these types of breaches? And, how much time should we be allocating? And I recently was on a plane ride to go to this conference that I told you about, and I was sitting next to an executive of a real estate agency, and it was very interesting conversation we had where I found that a lot of the problems that he was experiencing as an end user of the IT systems of the real estate agency were things that should have been addressed ages and ages and ages ago by his IT department. I mean, just basic standard training things. So that does not bode well. When I see a large organization that has a lot of employees and a very dense and deep IT team, someone should have been a long time ago addressing standard training for end users. And I think it's very, very, very important for the IT people of an organization to know how the staff of the organization uses their systems, what do they use them for, and then work with the people to say, hey, you can utilize this, this, and this in a more optimal way, and it's still going to work with your workflow. And there's no one right way to do it. I think the job of IT in many cases is to know the people, know what their workflows look like, and then to make suggestions for them, saying, you can save time, you can be more efficient, you can be more productive if you simply alter the way that you're using the existing technology that we have. But fundamentally, if IT never sits down to understand the people and spend some time to talk to them and, treat them as human beings that have workflow that's worth knowing about, then these opportunities end up getting wasted. So if you are in IT in an organization, I hope you are doing that. All right, so then there's this interesting statistic as to who was actually victimized. And 58%, so 58% of all of the breaches that the Verizon team investigated were categorized as small business. So if you are a small business and you think that the bad guys don't care about you and that because you're a small business, you don't have to worry about these things. Well, that is just the statistics do not tell that story. The statistics tell exactly the opposite story of that, which is that you're the biggest attack vector. I mean, you're the biggest opportunity for getting attacked simply because they assume you don't have the resources. They assume you have not put the mitigations in place to prevent them from being successful in their attacks. And 68% of breaches took months and months and months to discover, and in some cases, years. So this is also a pretty horrifying statistic because if 68% of breaches took months or longer to simply discover, then that data exfiltration had been happening for months and months and months. And in fact, the Verizon team goes into more detail on this, and they show that data exfiltration began literally minutes after the breach. Not even hours, not days, and certainly not months. So when the breach occurs, data exfiltration is starting immediately, and it takes months for the breach to even be detected, and then it takes more months, and in some cases years, to close that breach compromise and resolve that issue. So these are some pretty horrifying statistics. And so you have to ask, what is the damage to your organization of this data getting exfiltrated? And then compare that cost versus the simple cost of engaging in proactive security threat mitigation. And remember what I said in the beginning of this is that being successful in security threat mitigation is not hard. It is complicated, and you have to have the right people with the right talent and a whole lot of vigilance, and I mean a lot of vigilance, to achieve that result. But it can be achieved, and it can be achieved in the small to medium business market for a price tag that is actually pretty affordable. It is, I'd say you're looking at maybe $2,000 a year in labor and less than $2,000 a year in terms of appliance and hardware costs. So that's really not a lot of money. And if you think that a cybersecurity insurance policy is going to help you from that perspective, remember that cybersecurity insurance is strictly a reimbursement mechanism for a very limited set of things after a breach has been confirmed. And it is not a mechanism to actually assist you to cleaning up the mess. So I would ask you if, $3,000 to $4,000, or let's say less than $5,000 a year, is less expensive than potentially spending $100,000 fixing a breach, because that's probably what it's going to cost. I mean, anywhere's from $50,000 to $100,000 to clean up the issues of a breach. So I'm thinking that $5,000 a year is super mega cheap insurance because, we're talking about 1% here, or 10%, depending upon what that cleanup is going to be costing you. And, most people would look at that and say, yeah, this is the same sort of price tag that I pay for an insurance policy. Now, I'm actually not the biggest fan of cybersecurity insurance because I don't think it's a good use of money from that perspective. If an organization is making a choice between, are we going to spend money on cybersecurity insurance, or are we going to spend money on actually doing real risk mitigation and real threat mitigation? Well, I think the choice should be obvious at that point. But if you've already got your plans in place where you are doing risk mitigation, you are doing that threat mitigation actively, and you have that plan in place, and you're engaging in ongoing maintenance, and you're maintaining the value of the original investment that you made into this threat mitigation methodology in these systems. And then, if at that point in time you say, well, I want to buy that cyber insurance policy as well, go ahead, knock yourself out. But the cyber insurance policy is not a substitute for actually doing real threat mitigation. Now, let's talk briefly about the overall findings. They found that denial of service hacking was really a very high incidence. So remember, they're classifying things in terms of incidences and breaches, and I think that that is a good characterization to differentiate. We looked at the original, what, 44,000 some incidences and roughly 2,200 breaches, and that was the data set that they were using. So denial of service hacking was a big deal. Loss of data due to human error or errors in terms of misconfiguration was another big category as to why these, as to the number of incidences that had happened. And then you have the next smaller category is phishing. Phishing, spear phishing, social networking sort of phishing, and all of these things are typically coming through things like a business email compromise, which is actually 98% of it is coming through email, which is very interesting because this is one of those things that is stupid, simple, easy to deal with. And if you put a system in place such as hosted email security, which is a product by Trend Micro, or you put in a system called Trend Micro Cloud App Security, both of these products are superior in terms of mitigating the threat due to business email compromise. And BEC, otherwise known as business email compromise, is effectively where the bad guys are sending phishing or spear phishing emails to your people. So if you could simply put a product in place that is going to cost you probably less than $60 per year per user, that is a really cheap insurance plan. And by the way, that product does way, 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 way lots more than just simply mitigating the threat of business email compromise. So if 98% of social, human social attack breaches are going to be coming through business email compromise, and you can then mitigate that by simply putting the appropriate technology in place for less than $60 a year per person. That seems like a really good thing. And wrapping up that particular concept, the other aspect that you want to think about with regards to business email compromise is people receiving these spear phishing or these phishing emails. And number one, you want to make sure that they're not getting those emails, which is what the BEC system is designed to detect and then just whack and quarantine those emails straight up. But if an email does actually get through, you need that secondary level of protection, which is click protection. So imagine you used a product called DNS Watch, and then your end user clicks on that email, and that email launches, but then DNS Watch at the network layer looks at it and says, I don't think you really want to go to that URL. There's some very bad stuff there. And by the way, we have some phishing and spear phishing training for you as an end user. So this is some new functionality that WatchGuard has that we're now using, which is this DNS Watch product, and I'm quite happy with it. I mean, we've thought very strongly for probably more than 15 years that DNS was a massive mitigation vector that really needs attention. And so now this becomes an additional security layer on top of it. All right, well, that's it for part one of the discussion about the Verizon Data Breach Investigations Report of 2018. We'll pick up the rest of this on the next show.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea. Join our summer cigar events happening every 2 weeks on our patio. Take advantage of great deals, enjoy top-rated cigars, and relax with friends. Visit jackandrea.com for the complete schedule.
Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, back outside with the season's first straight-from-the-garden item, asparagus, currently available at Riverwood Produce and the Johnson Family Farm booth. Baked, grilled, or chopped in omelets, asparagus is versatile and delicious. The market is open Saturdays from 9 until 2.
Support for WGTD comes from Classic Violins, the premier southeastern Wisconsin workshop for family violin instruments. Master luthier, always on premises. office. Free estimates. ClassicViolins.com, 262-577-5488. Support for WGTD comes from Lemon Street Gallery. The Art Blast is coming to Lemon Street for young adults 13+. Fun and exciting sessions featuring pottery, painting, and assemblage. Mondays through Fridays, July 30th through August 2nd.